This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Classes start next week for Cincinnati Public School students, and the district has made some important staffing and policy changes for the new school year. Today, we're going to spend the hour talking about those changes and the reasons behind them, starting with the fact that fewer schools in the district will have full-time nurses this school year. Joining me now to discuss what students and families can expect for the new year are Cincinnati Public Schools Board of Education President Eve Bolton. Welcome back, Board President Bolton.
Thank you for having us.
Cincinnati Public Schools Interim Superintendent Shauna Murphy. Thanks so much for being here, Superintendent Murphy.
My pleasure.
And Cincinnati Federation of Teachers President Julie Sellers. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Thanks you all so much for being here. Cincinnati Public Schools is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Superintendent Murphy, the federal funds that Cincinnati Public Schools received during the pandemic, these ESSER funds that people know by that name, allowed the district to hire more nurses. And before we talk about that, explain how many nurses the district had before those funds became available and how schools were covered then.
Sure, I appreciate that question. Before the pandemic and before ESSER funds became available to us, we had a core group of nurses who would travel from school to school, helping out where possible. We did have some schools that had what we call school health aides, which is almost like a paraprofessional level of students. But then we decided to increase the number of actual nursing services because of the pandemic and working through all those stressors.
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of stressors, that's for sure. And Board President Bolton, when CPS got these millions of dollars in federal funds, these ESSER funds, why was hiring more school nurses a priority for the district?
Well, I think, dating all the way back to the years of Bobby Stern on city council, who was a public health nurse by profession, we've had a long history of wonderful nurses in our district and what have you. But over time, other politicians after Bobby Stern didn't necessarily keep it up. But we were able, in some partnership with the city and others, to have nurses and other health aides and other ways to provide health services. And so when we got the ESSER piece, top priority was health in every way, shape, and form. And so it made sense to invest in having that kind of presence in every one of the buildings. And what we've tried to do since is at least get back to our pre-COVID kinds of numbers.
Mm-hmm. And Superintendent Murphy, we've talked before on this program about how those funds are drying up, unfortunately, those millions and millions of dollars that came to the district to help with pandemic relief. That left the administration and the board to make some tough decisions. Explain what the district decided to do when it comes to school nurses and how schools will be staffed.
Absolutely. So our schools will still have nursing support. It may look a little bit different. So whereas there will be a number of schools that have registered nurses, there will be additional LPNs and, as I mentioned earlier, the school health assistants. So the schools will be covered for medical services and the needs that the children have.
How many schools will have a full-time nurse under this plan?
There will be about 30 students that have full-time nursing services, but I also want to remind everyone that our board has committed to the Community Learning Center model. And with that model, in several of our schools come school-based health centers. So we do have staffing through partnerships along those lines as well. Don't want people to forget about that.
Sure. And I don't know which of you wants to talk about it. How do you decide which schools have a full-time nurse there all the time? You mentioned the community learning centers, so they have health services on site, those schools. But for the other schools, how did you decide which ones needed a nurse there all the time and which ones would have kind of the rotating services?
It depends on the population. So, for example, right now, there are a couple of locations that don't have services, but will get there by next Thursday. Those locations are virtual high school, and the other location is our Promise Center Odell Owens location. So we're doing really well, probably better than people think or predicted we would do, but we're in a really good place. The board has made it very clear that student health and safety is a priority, and so this administration takes that very seriously.
Yeah,
We're talking about how fewer Cincinnati public schools, or I should say Cincinnati public schools, will have fewer nurses available because of the lack of federal funding that was provided during the pandemic, what that could mean for students and families. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. CFT President Sellers, I want to get your thoughts on this, because I know over the years when there have been discussions about nursing staffing and, okay, if there's not a nurse, who's going to be responsible for giving children medication they might need? And some teachers and administrative staff have raised some concerns like, if that's going to be on me, I'm worried I'm not well enough trained. What are you hearing from people? What do you think about the plan the district has in place?
I was very concerned when they were first talking about the cuts. At that point, they did not have a full plan. We didn't know what the health department was going to be able to provide, but also what were we going to be able to afford. I feel comfortable now that we're going to have the school health assistants, because we had those prior to. So that way, my concern was, if kids are getting meds, it should be the same person on a regular basis, because they know the students, they know the meds and the schedule. They are able to do the paperwork. They are familiar with the teachers and the office personnel. So that way they are able to make sure that the kids are not being, you know, that everything, they're on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, making sure that we have these school health assistants, that's one. I think that is the next step to fill in where we don't have the RNs. Every one of our schools does not have the same needs, but there are schools that do have higher medical needs, and they will be the schools that have the RN. I know I was a teacher I've been in the district 30-something years, and as an elementary school teacher, we never had a full-time RN. They were there a few days a week. They stayed on top of the records. They made sure that the kids, you know, they had the med boxes all planned out with predetermined things for each student. And so I feel comfortable with that. There are a lot of medical needs, but the district identified those schools so that those will be the targeted schools for RNs.
And Board President Bolton, my understanding is state law doesn't require every school to have a nurse, right? There's not some requirement that every school must have a nurse on staff at all times.
Oh, that's correct. In fact, when you look at Cincinnati Public, we have about 65 schools. We know that there'll be 30 schools with a full-time RN, but we also have, I believe, 24, as the superintendent mentioned, 24 school-based health centers. So it's not just us and our tax dollars, but it's also city services as well that we pay for. But also we have these great partnerships among our medical folks, whether it's a children's hospital or any of the other health providers. So I think of all the urbans, I know this is true in the state of Ohio and the tri-state area, we spend more time and more money in part because of our partnerships on student health than I know any other urban district does.
Superintendent Murphy, you mentioned these, I think you called them school health assistants, is that right?
That's correct.
Tell me a little bit more about those personnel, how they're trained, or you mentioned they're kind of paraprofessionals. Walk us through who they are and the kinds of things they do in schools.
Absolutely. These are either Cincinnati Public School employees or an agency employee that we contract the service with, and they are trained to be able to provide medication or whatever medical need a student may have. So they are often supervised by our nurses or our health clinics, as the board president mentioned, but they are trained and are familiar with the students and their families.
Mm-hmm. And so I know, you know, there are students in the district who need medication daily, whether it's for something like ADHD or even something like diabetes. There are conditions where students need regular medication during the school day. Who will be responsible for helping to dispense that? I guess it depends on the school.
It depends on the school, and it depends on the level of service the school has at the time.
Okay. Well, we are going to continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, we'll discuss other changes Cincinnati Public Schools is making for the new school year. This is Cincinnati Edition.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about Cincinnati Public Schools and the changes that are happening as the new school year approaches next week. My guests are Cincinnati Public Schools Board of Education President Eve Bolton, Cincinnati Public Schools Interim Superintendent Shauna Murphy, and Cincinnati Federation of Teachers President Julie Sellers. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Superintendent Murphy, there are a lot of moving parts with a school district as big as CPS. This nursing staffing and the health of students is one of those moving parts. Do you all have an administrator who oversees all these different positions and how this works, and what kind of background does that person have if you've got one?
Oh, absolutely. So we have a very strong human resources team. It's led by Julia Indelatio. The wonderful thing about Julia is she's been a part of Cincinnati Public Schools for a very long time, from a teacher, a social studies teacher at that, to helping to train teachers and principals in our evaluation system, to working in our HR department and growing through it to be at this level.
So she's the one who figures out all these moving parts and where people go and how all this is going to work.
So the senior leadership team works together on that, and we have her at the table with us having the conversations, making sure we get the right people in the right place.
Yeah. One of you might be able to weigh in on this. What kinds of trends has the district been seeing in terms of students' medical needs? I don't know if that's for you, Superintendent Murphy. I guess I'm wondering, are you all seeing an increase in the number of students who need regular medications? I wonder how big a part that has become of just managing the school day.
I tell you, in the city of Cincinnati, asthma is a big concern that we partner with Cincinnati Children's Hospital to try to mitigate some of the occurrences of asthma for children. But again, the beautiful thing about any of our kids who have healthcare needs in our schools, they can get support right then and there without missing days of school.
Yeah.
I would also add to that something that needs to be said is we have so many medically fragile kids, and we supply that support for them. But we also, like everybody else around this country, have had a significant increase in the need for medication, and more particularly throughout the country, a real need for additional mental health services. And in Cincinnati, again, we have our professional staff ourselves, but we also have a wonderful organization called Mind Peace, which has helped facilitate and organize a number of private and public providers so that our staff and our students at every school have support as well. So that's where we've seen a tremendous increase. But I think we were ready for it, but COVID really accelerated it.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you want to add something?
And I wanted to just say, and I don't think people really understand this, we have more school-based health centers in Cincinnati because of our community learning center model than any other district in the state of Ohio. And I think that is how we were able to stay on top of many of the things during COVID. Those centers were still open. Students and their families were still able to get medical services.
We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Annie. Thanks for your call. What is your question or comment?
Well, I have a comment. I have a doctorate in nursing, and I've worked in public health. And my concern is you can train someone to do a task, but having the education to know when not to do the task, when not to give the medication, is something that is more in the realm of the RN. And my concern is that these people may know what to do or how to do something, but they may not know when not to give the medication or not the treatment. And that I have a lot of concern for this way of solving the problem.
Thanks for that comment, Annie. Do you want to weigh in?
All of our school health assistants are working under the guidance of an RN, and they all have a specific RN that they are working with in partnership. So I do know that many of the schools that have medically fragile students that you may be referring to, those schools will have an RN. There will be 30 RNs, some LPNs, and then the school-based health centers. So I feel comfortable that we will be able to give the right medical care to the students this year. And if it doesn't work, we will make sure that we are there to help them. But this is the way it's been even prior to COVID. We're going back to some of those pre-COVID coverages of nursing care.
Did you want to
add anything? And I agree from the lens of being a building principal at one time, where I did have opportunity to work with a school health assistant who did a wonderful job, brought no concerns whatsoever, created a certain comfort level with the young people that they appreciated that person being in the building. I've also had the opportunity to work with doctors and RNs in our school-based health clinic as well. Also, absolutely no question the quality of service provided. But I, like President Sellers, am not at all concerned about the services we'll be able to provide this coming school year.
And it sounds like these assistants who are in the buildings, if they have any question, they've got an RN they can contact or
absolutely.
An LPN they can contact for. Okay. Well, thanks so much for that call, Annie. We appreciate that point and that comment. We appreciate it. I guess that, you know, Annie, the concern that she raises makes me wonder, have any of you heard any concerns from parents about this? And you mentioned that this is the way things worked before the pandemic, before there was this influx in funding, but it's kind of human nature. Once you've got those additional services, you don't want to give them up. And gosh, it was so nice to have more nurses and more buildings and that sort of thing. Have you heard any concerns from parents or families about this?
I would just say that during the 5-month process of trying to cope with this gap, if you will, and the reduction of those federal dollars, one of the very last things that got cut was the $1 million, which represented actually a small cut in the nursing and the other medical care. And it was in part because people had gotten used to it. We also keep this as a top priority. But indeed, the community spoke that they wanted to continue the high quality of health care in each of our buildings. And I think our superintendent and our unions have been able to figure out how to do that. So we're pleased that we were able to limit what cuts we did.
Yeah. Was that something? Go ahead.
One of the things that I really want to make sure that people understand, when I was in the classroom as a teacher, when my children were in CPS as students, when I was in CPS, the health department nurses were city employees. Just like now, they are city employees, and the city paid for that through the health department. The city voted to cancel that. And so then it left that full expense onto the school district, which at the time, I was so upset by it because it just seemed so unfair that a public health service should be provided by the city. The city paid for the nurses for years and years, and then with one vote, they eliminated that, which put the full burden on CPS. And I feel like a public health service is something that should be a shared responsibility. It should not just be placed on the school themselves, and that the city should still be helping to fund some of this.
How long ago was that? Does anybody remember the year that happened, or roughly how long ago it happened?
It was around 2010 or 11.
So it sounds like CPS had to figure out pretty quickly, mm-hmm. okay, if we want to keep these services, how do we do it? Where do we find the money? How do we make this mm-hmm. work?
Yes, we've found that the city faces financial problems just as everybody does. But unfortunately, one of the things that has invariably been cut or reduced has been those services that they traditionally, dating all the way back to Bobby Stern, provided, whether it's nurses or, as we've now found out, too, we've been paying for our own crossing guards, and suburban districts don't do that. Their towns, their villages, and townships do. So we're having to do more and more of that effort. And so it's been a burden, but we know that these are the services that our families and our children and teenagers require.
We're going to take another quick break, then we're going to come back to talk about more changes and new policies that Cincinnati Public Schools will be implementing for the new school year. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Reducing the number of full-time school nurses in the district isn't the only change Cincinnati Public Schools has had to make for the new school year. There's a new school transportation policy for 7th and 8th graders, a new cell phone policy that's likely to get students' attention, and a reorganization of some of the district's school buildings. Cincinnati Public Schools Board of Education President Eve Bolden, Cincinnati Public Schools Interim Superintendent Shauna Murphy, and Cincinnati Federation of Teachers President Julie Sellers have agreed to stick around to discuss all that and more. Thank you all so much for staying with us.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Let's start with just kind of the budget overview. I mean, we've talked about how CPS had to cut the budget by millions of dollars. I think it was about $90 million total at the beginning because of these losing this pandemic emergency relief funding known as these ESSER funds. I just want to start by asking each of you, how difficult was it to make these cuts and balance the budget? You jumped into the interim superintendent role after some of that had begun, but how difficult was it to close that gap, Superintendent Murphy?
It was extremely challenging. If you just even think about your own personal budget, and let's say you had to reduce it by $1,000 a month, how hard that would be. But we knew what the task at hand, what we were assigned to do, and we were willing to step up and do it. But we didn't do it alone. We did not do it in isolation. I think the reason that we were able to get to a balanced budget and closing the gap is because of the collaborative spirit of working not only with administration, with the input of the board, but also collaborative efforts with all of our union presidents. Everyone came to the table. We had numerous meetings throughout those first tender weeks, and everyone had ideas to put on the table. And it was not what someone else should or should not do, but what they could do to help make a difference.
Well, I want to get your thoughts on that, Teachers Union President
yes.
Sellers. I mean, my goodness, there was some consternation, I don't know if that's the right word, earlier in the process. Of course, we had a change in the person who was superintendent in the middle of all of this while all this was going on. How difficult was it to get to the point, you know, where schools are ready to open, the budget's balanced? How tough was that?
It was really difficult. Superintendent Murphy was appointed on a Monday night, and she called a meeting with all of the union presidents at 9 a.m. on Tuesday morning and said, look, this is what we need to do. And everybody agreed. We all came together. It was probably this is my 17th year in this position, and working with the budget, it was probably one of the most collaborative processes that I've been through. We had a task force that met once or twice a week all throughout the summer, coming up with cuts. We went through every single contract. We went through every budget line. We said, do we really need this here? Are there duplications of services? We cut those. I mean, we went through it with a fine-tooth comb. And I think that some of the cuts were really difficult, but we were able to make sure that we are properly maintaining and staffing our schools with safe staffing levels.
Well, and Board President Bolden, I mean, that's the kind of rubber meets the road at the school board, and you have to vote on these things and make very difficult decisions as the school board president, as the school board as a whole. How tough was this process in your view just to get to the finish line?
Well, I think I've been on the school board, I think, as many years as Julie's been president of the teachers union in those 17 or so years. I think this has been an extremely difficult effort by everyone. But I think when we reconvened, if you will, with a new administration and knew that this task force that was being brought forth included our superintendent and our treasurer and our top administration, and also, if you will, the leadership of the six unions, as a board member, besides listening to the community, when you have a united front like that, based on collaboration and love of district and needing to know that we must make these changes, those decisions got easier, as difficult as it was, because you felt as though they were sanctioned by the people that would have to implement them and serve our kids.
Well, and you know, the challenges never stop for a school district on all kinds of fronts. And I understand that just last night, the district's treasurer said the district might see a $15 million cut in state funding from the state of Ohio. Now, that seems like a little bit of money compared to $90 million, but $15 million is still significant. Board President Bolton, what kind of impact could that have on the district? I want to get your thoughts on that.
Having lived through what we just lived through, I won't use the word devastating, but the idea that the state budget, first of all, is a biennial budget and you never know, even after you've done your budget, what the stability of theirs is, plus the idea of changing the way schools are being funded, certainly kind of on a yearly basis by the state legislature that has no love at all for urban districts or districts with high poverty or great diversity. That $15 million would make, if indeed that is what is projected and it comes true, would have a negative effect on not only this coming year's budget, but more particularly, ultimately, on our five-year forecast. And our five-year forecast is what we live by regarding how we budget, how we hire staff, what kinds of initiatives and programs. But it does point to the fact that we, as we face our third century together as a district, we have to change almost everything we're doing in order to sustain ourselves because of bad financial situations from the state of Ohio and the lack of appreciation for the urban districts from Columbus.
Superintendent Murphy, I'm not sure if you're the right person on this panel to ask this question, so feel free to pass the hot potato if you want it to go to somebody else. But why would that be? I mean, you know, so many people, we've done a number of conversations on this show about rising property values, people are paying higher property taxes. How would that translate into potentially less money for CPS? Do you have a handle on that?
The president is going to chime in on this one.
And I'm going to chime in.
Everybody has some thoughts, huh? Okay.
I'll chime in just from a standpoint that Cincinnati, I spent my teaching career at Wyoming City Schools, which is identified by the state and everybody around as a wealthy district. Well, guess what? The Cincinnati Public School, by the state of Ohio's measurement, is identified as a wealthy school district, even though we have this tremendous high poverty and what have you. So the system that is used to decide what monies we get is just against us to begin with because of how we're identified. So yes, as our wonderful taxpayers who are so supportive of us throughout, as their property taxes have gone up, indeed, then the state decides we don't need as much state money. And then you have to figure into that the federal dollars that are figured in part by the state. So, and distributed by the state, I should say. So it's a very difficult challenge.
Did you want to weigh in?
And I believe that much of this property tax, the increase of the property taxes and the revenues that are coming from that is due a lot to the abatements that we are passing out in Cincinnati left and right, because everybody's having to pay more because some people are not paying their fair share. But like Cincinnati, we get 40% of our money from the state, and Cleveland gets close to 90%. So you can see, but we have about the same poverty rate for our students. And so you see where the property value really has a great impact on the amount of money you're receiving from the state.
Mm-hmm. And then, Lucy, my comment, if I may, strictly commentary, you know, I took my master's level education courses in the late 80s, early 90s, and the way we fund schools in Ohio was unconstitutional at that time. It still is. Mm-hmm. There's been no shift at all. It's gotten worse.
Well, you know, we've been talking about some of these big changes that the districts already had to make because of the loss of this $90 million in ESSER funding and you know, all the other forces that are swirling around. One of the big changes that happened over the summer that happened pretty quickly was the restructuring of some of the district's school buildings. Superintendent Murphy, I feel like this is a bit of a pop quiz because it's so complicated, but can you kind of explain what's shifting there?
Happy to explain. First, the why. The why is, as we were all going through each school budget, each department budget, line by line, it constantly brought me back to conversations the board has had for many years, now affectionately known as the ad hoc work. And I thought, we cannot continue to do business like this. We have several elementary schools that have 300 students or fewer, and we have to do something different. And so I thought, this is the time to begin to put those things in motion. So we have a school, Riverview East Academy, and none of these changes are commentary about how well the school is doing, no commentary about those students or the staff. It is in an effort to make the district healthy. And so what we started to do is take a look at all the school budgets, looking at the enrollment. And so we determined that we needed to begin some shifting based on what programs, what schools families were asking for. And so we began to make those shifts. So I'm happy to say in a very short period of time, maybe 6 weeks or so, we'll be ready to open on the 14th with all of those changes that were made.
And walk us through those changes, sure. Because there are different groups of students shifting, sure, in different ways.
Sure. We recognize that we had about 106 students at Riverview East Academy in grades kindergarten through 6. At the same time, a neighboring school, Mount Washington, was a very small school with about 300 kids. We made the decision to move the K-6, 106 or so students, to Mount Washington. I'll go ahead and put a pin here and add, the board insisted on deep community engagement, and so we did that. And some of that engagement came out with families, teachers saying, hey, a better picture of this would be to move K-8 students to Mount Washington. And last night, our board supported that and agreed with that through a unanimous, I believe, vote. In addition to that, we have our Spencer students. We have had to turn away hundreds of families because of the space that we have at the current Spencer building.
And let's explain what the Spencer Center is, if you don't mind, for folks who aren't familiar.
Absolutely. That is our school for gifted and exceptional students. It is a building for students in grades 3 through 12 that is essentially in a building that was designed for elementary school students. And so we began to lose some of those students as they exited sixth grade because they wanted more of a high school experience as it relates to around athletics and more of the extracurricular opportunities. They needed a larger gym. They needed a high school regulation size gym. So what we decided to do is move those Spencer students to the first floor of Riverview East Academy for this school year. The 9th through 12th Riverview East Academy students will be on the second floor. In addition to that, we have the Odell Owens Center of about 50 students. Again, a huge cost per student. And so we've decided to combine that school with our Promise Center program, and they will be in the Alms Place building for this upcoming school year.
And am I right that the Dr. Odell Owens Center for Learning serves students with behavioral and academic difficulties? Is that the mission of
that
school?
Okay. That is correct.
Okay. So that's a lot of moves in a short amount of time.
One more move I have to tell you about because I'm so excited. I cannot let this moment pass by. One of the things that people have talked about for years is the need for young people in grades 5, 6, 7, 8 to begin to have their own space. They have for years in our district been in either some type of K-8 setting, 7-12 setting. And so we have an opportunity having the Odell Owens building in Madisonville available to us. And what we've decided to do is start our first 7th and 8th grade campus there.
Talk about why that's so important, you think, to have those 7th and 8th graders in their own space.
Yeah, that's that pre-puberty, entering puberty stage. And if you've ever taught 7th and 8th graders, or if you are a current parent of a 13, 14-year-old child, then you really understand that we want professionals who are really experienced and trained to work with that age group. It is very different from a second grader, as it is very different from an 11th grader in terms of the approach and meeting the needs of the students.
Yeah, gosh, if you can even remember being a 7th or 8th grader, those are very tricky times to navigate for everyone involved. We did get a call from Sarah, who's in the Wyoming School District that you referenced earlier, Board President Bolden. She said that their 1% tax has helped in their district and lifted the tax burden. Are you familiar with what she's talking about there?
Yes. Hello, Sarah. I was a teacher, and I think the teachers union president, when indeed Wyoming was one of the very first districts, if not the first district in the state of Ohio, that introduced an income tax for the schools. It makes a world of difference because it grows. And indeed, it was historic, and we knew that it would positively impact. And I believe the great superintendent at the time was Dr. Gary Payne, and we had a wonderful board, and we had a community that wanted to support what would be best financial planning. And indeed, an income tax does that for you.
And that is not a resource that Cincinnati Public Schools has.
No, it is not.
Okay. Well, we're talking about some big changes with Cincinnati Public Schools for the new school year. If you have questions or comments, you can call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Superintendent Murphy, I'm going to let you get a drink of water. But you've been quoted as saying, you know, these changes, some board members had expressed concerns that, gosh, these changes with these buildings restructurings could happen pretty quickly. Will that be difficult for students, for parents? But you were quoted several times as saying, hey, we need to do what's best for students. These are the changes that are best for students. Can you talk a little bit more about why you think these changes are best for students? We just talked about those seventh and eighth graders, so I think we covered that. But these, talk a little bit more about why you think they're best for students and also how they save the district money.
So our theme this year is Here for Kids, and it's a rallying cry around everyone who wants to support student outcomes from a whole child approach. Everything about the kid and everything that people contribute to make the kid ready for school. And what I mean by that is we have kids who come to school with mental health needs, as the president mentioned earlier. We talked about physical needs. We haven't talked about hunger or homelessness, but those things exist in the city of Cincinnati. We can't ignore them. We have to address them. We will address them. And so that is our approach in the work right now and in this season. We will see a better use of our resources over time as we roll out this three-phase plan. It will take us some time, but right now, even if we look at just our transportation, through no one's fault, we wanted to give choices to kids and to families, but we're getting to the point we just cannot afford it. We just can't afford to keep doing business the way we've been doing it. And so the more resources we can get to kids, no doubt the better they will be. The more adults that we have to wrap their arms around kids and families, the more connectedness we have as families see us as partners with their children, the better off our school district will be, the better off the children and their families will be, and ultimately the better our city will be.
Board President Bolton, let's talk about student transportation. The district is consolidating some yellow bus services. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and how difficult it was for the board to kind of review that and make those decisions?
Yes, our transportation costs are well over $50 to $60 million a year now. And the most expensive form of transportation is yellow bus. And so on yellow bus, transport for the most part K-8 kids on yellow bus. And some of our schools that are indeed K-8 schools will continue to have yellow bus for the 7th and 8th graders. But the 7th and 8th graders that are attending our 7 through 12 high schools, they will now be not just a choice about Metro, but will be asked by us to get on Metro. And Metro is starting to, has made a wonderful presentation last night regarding direct routing, as well as passes that are only to be used to and from school, extracurricular kinds of passes. So we're finding that the yellow bus piece remains too costly, although there are less shortages than we've lived through for the last 3 years, both in drivers and in buses. Metro is our most cost-effective, but as everyone in the town knows, almost four years ago now, Metro ended the dedicated routes that basically were open to the public but carried disproportionately high school kids. And when we had to make that adjustment, it was very rough, and all those things happened at the same time. And while I don't like to stress being hopeful, I do have a greater degree of confidence tonight and today that we will be able to meet most of the families' needs, both for yellow bus and Metro, And I think there will be greater security and safety and, more importantly, accountability for both the kids and our staff and also the people that provide the services.
And do I understand correctly that for some of the yellow bus services, some schools will be kind of sharing yellow bus routes, that they it might not be a buses dedicated for one specific school, that there might be some overlap with students from different schools? Is that right?
It's not very extensive, but it is some. And something that also our taxpayers that are listening need to know, we not only have to provide for our 36,000 kids, but we have to provide also for every parochial and private and charter kid. And the law is different for them than it is for our students. The state of Ohio does not allow private, parochial, or charter students who are in 7th or 8th grade to ride Metro. But it says it's okay for our kids to do that. So that cost of providing for all the other students that are going to the other kinds of schools is very, very costly. And that per student is much more costly than for our students that are on Metro. And we applaud what Metro has been able to do, particularly in the last 8 or 10 months, as to try to meet our needs and provide for our kids.
And I just want to make sure I understand. So under state law, Cincinnati Public Schools has to pay the yellow bus transportation costs for those students who go to private, parochial, or charter schools?
All costs. That includes the metro costs for those private or parochial or charter schools, kids that go to our high schools. So, yes, we do. And we are not reimbursed in the kinds of numbers. And those schools also, even though some of them are for profit, pay us any amount of money. And indeed, it's been very difficult sometimes for a number of those schools to give us the information that we need to even meet the needs that they have. So it is rough. It is hard. In many ways, they're all our kids, but still another disproportionality regarding an urban district like ours.
Union President Sellers, can you talk about, you know, we're talking about transportation, and I think some people think of that as something that happens before class or after class, but that really has a big impact on classrooms, right? And the amount of time students spend on the bus, how they get to school. Talk about the impact that
has. It absolutely has an impact on what happens in the classroom. As we all know, there was a shortage of yellow buses and yellow bus drivers. So there were kids who were not getting to school because the bus route wasn't running, or they were getting to school late because the bus was on the second route and the first route ran over. So they were merging routes together. I think this year will be better, especially having less students on the yellow buses, that we'll be able to have the routes will be able to run on time and more efficiently than what they have been running since COVID. Also, in many of the other suburban districts, they don't provide any transportation for high school students. So those parents are on their own to get the kids to school, because high school transportation requirements by the state for public schools is optional. So I think that the students will be able to, you know, ride on Metro. The Metro routes are more consistent than the yellow buses were.
One of the other decisions the board had to make earlier this summer was voting to eliminate some assistant principal and program director positions. Superintendent Murphy, has it been tricky for schools to prepare for the new year without people in those roles? How has that been working throughout the summer?
I've found that our schools have adjusted. Our principals are amazing principals who would be amazing regardless of these changes or not. And that's what we do. We are in public education and we're here to serve the people, and we are here to be ready for the first day of school and for our kids to come through the doors.
Yeah. I know there was some intense concern voiced over cutting the English as a second language manager position when that decision was made. Has preparing for the new year been more challenging without that position?
Well, the interesting, I'm glad you asked me about that, is that conversation gave us an opportunity to reimagine some things for our English language learners and their families. And so I'm really excited. I don't want to go too far, because Thursday we're having our back to school event, and there will be a couple of announcements made at that time. But this conversation gave us an opportunity to reimagine what we're going to do to support those students and their families.
Okay, so no spoiler alerts needed, huh? Okay. Is the district seeing a growing number of English language learners each year?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we are stepping up to meet the needs of those children as well.
Yeah. I want to talk about a policy shift that wasn't about saving money, but will be something I bet a lot of students will be talking about this year, and that's the change in cell phone usage policies. Board President Bolton, do you mind walking us through what the change is?
Well, I don't know enough to tell you specifically what the change is, but as a retired teacher, I think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, because I know, having been a teacher when cell phones actually started, if you will, I do remember throwing one of them out the window of a play rehearsal, if I recall.
So I bet that was a big hit.
That was a big hit, but I'm no longer in that district. But what it means to us is that there will be limited use of a cell phone. It doesn't mean that the kids will not have access. It doesn't mean that their families won't be able to reach them. But what it means is that this vicious and sometimes verbally violent kind of anger that comes through those cell phones and through the texting and what have you and all the other social media, those things are being relieved. And I think the superintendent, and I know Julie can also speak to this as to the impact it will have on each classroom.
Let me ask you, Superintendent Murphy, to kind of explain. It has to do with these Yonder pouches, mm-hmm. right?
Yes. So our board has always had a policy around cell phones. They are working to enhance the policy that we currently have. Our schools have also always had procedures for the cell phones. What we have seen is that one school piloted the Yonder pouch, is what you're referring to, which is simply kind of like a case where the kids come to school every day. They receive their case. They put their cell phone in the case. They lock it. They keep their phone in the case with them throughout the day. In an emergency situation, they do have access to that phone. But outside of that, we ask parents who are trying to reach their children to call home, call the school office, not home, the school office. And we're trying to encourage the kids to use the school office like they did when I was in school.
Back in the day, yeah. And I know we're running out of time, but is this something teachers are super excited about?
Oh, they are totally excited about it. And I have been on a state committee, uh-huh. which other districts in the state have already been using it. And I've talked to those union presidents, and they love them.
All right. Well, I've been talking with Cincinnati Public Schools Board of Education President Eve Bolton, Cincinnati Public Schools Interim Superintendent Shauna Murphy, and Cincinnati Federation of Teachers President Julie Sellers. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.